Yes, welcome back to the show here on World Football Daily. It is a massive Friday, looking back at all the action that's taken place this week. Of course, we had the Europa League and the Champions League semi-final draws, and we've got a big weekend of soccer coming your way as well today. I'm delighted to be having a look through a small part of it, but a very important part of it. Nevertheless, today with our very special guest, Mr. Brian Dunseth, joining us on the show, former US men's national team, LA Galaxy, RSL, Dallas Burn, Columbus Crew, you name it, he's played for it in America. How you doing, Brian? Today, my man.
I'm doing good. I always forget how many teams I really did play for. I think I still hold the record somewhere there.
I'm sure they describe you as a North American journeyman in football in that sort of way. You've seen plenty of places. Which was your favorite place to play in, actually, Brian?
You know, it's random when I kind of think back, and I guess I kind of close my eyes and think about what jersey I wore. For some reason, I'm always in the yellow of Columbus. Not really sure why. It was about 2 years I was there, but really enjoyed my time in Columbus, and it was a really good life experience. I think the group, the team itself, it was a fun locker room to be a part of.
It must be nice for you then to see them doing so well in the early part of the Major League Soccer season. We're only 5 games into it, but the Crew have really kind of kicked off where they left off from last season.
Yeah, it is, and it's enjoyable for me because my old teammate Robert Varzija is, you know, enjoying a lot of success. I think for a while people were thinking that he was just kind of parlaying the success of Ziggy Schmidt and that kind of secondary growth as a team, the pieces of the puzzle that Ziggy put together. But I'm happy to see that through some additions and subtractions, they look like a side right now that's very well into competing for that Eastern Conference title this year.
How do you kind of just keep everything calm when a season starts well in Major League Soccer? Because we see so many times teams making a late great run, as the Galaxy did last season, and it's very easy to get caught up in the early half of the season and setting the expectations too high.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? I think what LA did last year is they changed the perception of disappointment. I think they were so bad in the early part of the season. They, you know, the previous years, they were so good at grinding out results, a lot of 1-0 games, and they could just utilize that experience, especially in the back, just to hold on for the shutout. But, with Omar out, with Josh Saunders away from the team for a little while, with kind of some ups and downs in terms of injuries and I guess just the lack of quality going forward was a bit surprising last year. So, for LA to finally put it together and continue that run and really fire in, it's just interesting to see how the league's evolution continues to grow. If you can get through that first part of the season and be average, and then hit that hot streak, I think it continues to irritate some of the purists in the game, just because you want that single table system. If you could. You want to reward the team that's been the best overall throughout the season. But with the playoff system and the way we have that final championship match, it doesn't really matter how good or how bad you are throughout the season. It matters who's getting hot near the end.
How do you then keep a good run from the early part of the season going? I mean, we're seeing the Columbus Crew starting well, not perfectly, but starting very well indeed this season. How do you maintain that throughout the course of the year? Because, as you say, we see so many teams getting into hot streaks. Is it a case of mixing it up with trades and transfers? Is it a case of just keeping a focused mentality? What's the key, do you think, Brian?
I think it's a little bit of all of it, but I think most important is injury-free. I mean, you have injuries throughout the course of the season. I think it's one of the reasons why you see some of these teams really struggling at the beginning of the year. And especially, I think the first 10 games of the season, some of these teams, I know for Real Salt Lake, 5 out of 7 start on the road, plus missing Javier Morales, Matt Borchers, and Chris Wingert to start the season on the backside of getting rid of Chris, of Will Johnson, Fabian Espindola, and Hamson Olave. So when you look at how teams start, I don't put too much focus on it, but I really do believe it comes down to just staying as healthy as possible, while at the same time kind of tempering your own expectations, making sure as a head coach you're not overtraining, making sure as a head coach you're focused on the positives, but still making sure the team sees the negatives to continue to build upon what should be a positive product. I think sometimes you look at a team like Montreal, tactically, they're phenomenal. You know, they start the season 4-0, but it's not a fun game to watch. They sit back, they defend, and they look to hit on the counter. And I think a team success like Montreal early in the season, I'm really not sure where they're gonna be at the end of the season, because while they're getting the results early, they're not really playing that well.
Very much almost an Italian influence on that Montreal side that's brought in a number of Italians then in their style of play this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you bring in a head coach with the experience that Schellenbaum has, and that influence, the Nestas of the world, the Devaios of the world, the spine of that team is very, very strong. And like you said, tactically, the Italians are probably the pinnacle of tactical awareness, tactical approach to the game, really, truly understanding what that 4-4-2 formation looks like. And when Devaio's on fire, you know, you can really sit back, defend well, look to spring through speed on the flanks, and then you've got a lethal finisher like Devaio who it feels like every single shot is on frame and testing the target, if not finding the back of the net. So if he dries up and you know, you start to see some injuries to some of the bigger name players for Montreal, I think things could get ugly a lot quicker than they realize.
And a section of fans that will be very pleased to hear you talk about it doesn't matter this early part of the season too much will be New York Red Bulls fans. It's been a disappointing start for them. There's always so much expectation on New York because they're in New York, because they have Thierry Henry and they have a big kind of the sponsorship of Red Bull, a huge company. Is there maybe too much expectation on them considering what else this side has? They have Cahill, they have Henry, but there's not so much going on around it aside from that, do you think?
Well, I mean, I think they got stronger. Adding Fabian Espíndola, adding Hamison Olave, you add those to Cahill and Henry. Johnny Steele's come in, started on the left-hand side. You've got Heath Pierce, you got Dax McCarty. I'm still not sure about Robles in goal. I think he's a solid keeper. I'm just not sure if he's good enough. I think they need a stud. I think they need a standout in goal, some guy they know. Or if you're going to make one or two mistakes in the back, this guy's got the ability to make those stops. But I'll tell you what, it's not Mike Pecky's. I feel like Mike Pecky, it's not a bad choice. I understand the decision why you bring him or give him the opportunity to be a head coach. You add Robin Fraser, so immediately you have the experience as an assistant, as a head coach, and the understanding of the salary cap, the allocation process, the whole crazy money system involved in Major League Soccer. But all the games that I've watched from New York's perspective, they just get punished. They make one or two mistakes a game, and they are glaring mistakes, not sticking with runs, not staying with the mark, secondary runs coming through, poor communication. So as much of the pressure is on Mike Pecky as a first-year head coach and a relatively inexperienced coach, just a couple years as an assistant underneath his belt, the results have nothing to do with his coaching. They just have to do defensively with some really, really poor decisions that are being made. And unfortunately for New York, I think you just haven't seen a team punished with this much consistency as they've been punished to start the year.
How much then would a big result against DC this weekend mean? But they've got Thierry Henry coming back, and you mentioned Fabian Espinaldas. He's going to be hopefully coming back into the starting lineup as well for New York. A big win this weekend could really just take the pressure off.
Yeah, they have to. I think now it gets to the point where if they do not beat DC United, I think the pressure and the focus then becomes not about the players. It becomes about the head coach, Mike Pecky. And I think that's always a disappointing situation because we're in a result-oriented business. But a team like New York and the statue of Red Bull behind it, the focus of it being such a huge organization in the eyes of Major League Soccer, Mike Pecky's just not going to get the benefit of the doubt. He's not going to get enough time that maybe he should or would get at a different club. With those types of players, with that type of money being spent, if they don't beat DC, I think publicly, from the press perspective, things can get ugly quick.
How important is it for New York to have a spell of success in Major League Soccer, maybe winning an Open Cup or winning the MLS Cup, of course, especially when you take into account the new franchise that we keep hearing rumors and murmurs about, the secondary New York franchise that could be coming into Major League Soccer?
Yeah, exactly, right? At this point, I'm not sure how much more important it is for them to have success or for this new franchise to be named. I think, again, one of the most difficult parts for the New York Red Bulls is they're not playing in New York. They're playing in Harrison, New Jersey. I've been on the train to try to get down to Harrison, and it's not the easiest. It's not the easiest way to get down there. So I agree with Don Garber. I think that New York can absolutely, absolutely support two teams. It's just a matter of making sure structurally that all the pieces of the puzzle are put in place. Because I honest to God believe that a stadium in Queens, another franchise in New York City, I think that it's the right direction for MLS to be looking, while at the same time really looking hard at a possibility of allowing Orlando to come in to Major League Soccer sooner than rather than later.
And that East Coast is hotting up, of course, with D.C., New York, and Philadelphia will be unveiling it, we expect to see this weekend, Jose Kleberson, their new signing. What does Kleberson bring to this Philadelphia Union side, a side that struggled, did well in the Cup last year, but didn't have a very impressive season in Major League Soccer?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure even John Hackworth knows, to be honest with you. I think with Freddie Adu, it's been a debacle. It's been an absolute debacle. You come back, and based off of a limited success with the U.S. men's national team at the Gold Cup a couple of years ago, he parlays that into a big money signing in Philadelphia. Peter Novak gets fired, and it never really seemed to work out for Freddie. I think Freddie has technical ability and has a creative flair that very few players have in Major League Soccer. But at some point, and I know Freddie pretty well. I think he's a good kid. I think he's a good person. But at some point, it's got to not be about the money. It's got to be about the right opportunity. And he's bounced around a lot, and he hasn't had a lot of success. And it's getting to the point in his life, at his age, and where he's at, he's just got to play games, and he's got to play a lot of games. And if he's not succeeding in Major League Soccer for the third team, I think we have to question what's going on. He's a good kid. He's a good person. But it just can't be about the money. It's got to be about playing. And his development has continued to be stunted because he is not playing week in, week out. It can't always be about the coach. It can't always be about the club. There can't always be an excuse for Freddie. At some point, Freddie's got to put his hand up and say, either I've got to adjust to what the expectations are for me personally, or I've just got to continue to hunt the money and go country to country. Because he's made a lot of moves in a very short life. And you just like to hope that he can find some stability and some success wherever that may be.
Now, the reigning champions, the LA Galaxy, take on Dallas this evening. Before we have a look at their game coming up in Texas this weekend, what did you make of the midweek performance in the CONCACAF Champions League semifinal down against Monterrey in that 1-0 loss to the Mexican side?
Yeah, I think what we've continued to see when we get to this stage of CONCACAF Champions League is the biggest difference, there's two differences, really, or I guess three. Number one, the comfortability on the ball. The individual player in Mexico, his technical ability to get himself out of pressure, not just go side to side, but continuously go forward. And when you see 1v1, 1v2 situations, players from Monterrey and Santos Laguna are good enough to get out of that pressure. Two, just punishing mistakes. For LA, they made two glaring mistakes in the final 10 minutes. But before that, there was warning signs with Suazo and Domínguez at the Home Depot Center. Monterrey made the same mistakes. LA just wasn't able to capitalize. And the two that stand out to me A.J. De La Garza scores a great goal, but Sean Franklin's opportunity in the end of the first half was a golden opportunity. And then Robbie Keane looking to pass the ball into an empty net. Juan Ibarra, the goalkeeper for Monterrey, with that big save. Those are the two plays that stand out for me. And three, it's just the depth of the team. You know, Monterrey being able to just to go to the well and bring in three young attacking players that are all a part of Mexico's under-23 or Mexico under-20 team. Whereas, you know, Bruce Arena's forced to go with Mike Stevens coming off the bench. It's just the depth is a huge issue. The quality of depth coming off the bench is a huge issue. But those three things, saying that, I think we're a lot closer than we've ever been. And I'm not sure, I said this last night on we were taping a CONCACAF Champions League review show. I said last night, it might not be next year, but I think within 2 years, it's starting to get ugly for Mexican teams. Because I think what we saw for the very first time is an unbelievable amount of respect shown to the LA Galaxy. And by that, I mean Victor Manuel Vucic is throwing Severo Mesa into the midfield and essentially playing with five defenders to start out that first leg. They get the 2-1 win on the road, and then he rests seven starters at the weekend in a loss to Toluca. So he made that second leg in Monterrey a primary focus, sacrificing a disappointing result and a disappointing campaign in Liga MX just to make sure he had a shot to play his sharpest and his fittest and his best players in that return leg in Monterrey.
What did you make of LD Landon Donovan getting his, I believe it's his first start since returning from his hiatus, let's say, over the off-season from Major League Soccer and from soccer in general? Landon got a lot of the ball but didn't seem to produce too much with it. What did you make of his return to the starting lineup?
Well, I think it's important because Landon's a difference maker. And even a Landon at 80% fit and 80% sharp, that's the equivalent of 120% fit and 120% sharp to the average MLS player. I would say I was more disappointed, if that's the direction I could possibly go, with the response from Robbie Keane. I think Robbie Keane was the best player on the field for the LA Galaxy, yet he continued to throw his arms up in the air and get frustrated and pull his shirt and get pissed off at the referee. And I think at that point, the Panamanian referee, Roberto Moreno, just elected not to make any calls in favor of Robbie Keane at that point. And Robbie Keane had already been sent off in group play because of his demonstrations over not getting the right call and getting frustrated. I think he and Landon linked up very well at times. I think they were both looking for each other. You could see that understanding of two high-level professionals. Overall disappointing because the frustrations, I think, of the referee's lack of decisions going LA's way kind of really played into the mindset of the attack for LA a little bit more than we would possibly want as fans.
Now, Brian, it was a disappointing midweek, of course, for the LA Galaxy and for the Seattle Sounders, but a very good midweek for you. You're obviously a football connoisseur, if you will. You love to get around the world looking at different styles and different teams, and you were watching Fenerbahce in the Europa League last night. This is a side that, for me personally, I haven't seen too much of this season because the English media is starting to take the Europa League a little more seriously with three competitors in the quarterfinals last night. But Fenerbahce against Lazio, from what I've gathered from the highlights and over the two legs in general, a quality performance from a side definitely that shouldn't be underestimated this season.
Yeah, on paper you would think Lazio would be able to just demolish and easily brush aside Fenerbahce. And again, it's Just like any knockout round, if you make bad decisions, you're going to get punished, and that's what happened in that first leg. Two yellow cards to Anazi, a midfielder for Lazio. 48th minute, Lazio find themselves down a man. I think they played well on the road in Turkey, but inevitably, when you're playing down a man for that long, you end up getting punished, and that's what happened. Weibo from the penalty spot, Derek Kell finds a goal. In the 90-plus minute, that makes it 2-0 aggregate. And in the second leg, Fenerbahce goes to Lazio. Lazio's playing the empty stadium again. It's the third time in Europa League that they've had to play in an empty stadium because of their fans. The first time the missiles, the fireworks, some of the suspect comments coming from the fans against Tottenham, and then the same type of situation with Borussia Mönchengladbach. And at that point, they were handed a two-game ban, so an empty stadium. Lazio threw everything at them, just couldn't keep their shots on target. Fenerbahce ends up hitting on the counter, levels 1-1. That took the aggregate to 3-1 and got the road goal. And they're a good team. They're not a bad team. And what surprises me about the lack of press about Fenerbahce is the fact that there is so much EPL experience in the side. Raul Morelos, Joseph Yobo, Dirk Kuyt. I mean, it's not a bad team whatsoever. It's going to be interesting to see how they end up looking in this next round. Good quality side, has some good athleticism. They sit back. They've got a lot of experience, a lot of international experience in the individual positions. I'm just not sure they get through this next round. And primarily, I think it's because of their goalkeeper, Volkan. He's a little suspect. He makes some interesting decisions coming off his line. Last night against Lazio, he missed three crosses in the first and second half each, and he spilled three balls that came in shots from distance. So it's a good team. It's a tactical team. They're unbeaten now in six games on the road. That's always important. They got four shutouts on the road in the last six. So I think they're going to give teams trouble. I just don't think they're good enough to progress past the semifinal round.
And we've seen, obviously, the draw taking place today. They take on Benfica. Basel taking on Chelsea. Who is your favourite, especially when you consider, maybe, Brian, that Chelsea have had some shocking performances in this tournament since they dropped out of the Champions League?
I'll tell you what, man. I did that first leg, Benfica at Newcastle, in Lisbon. I would be frightened right now to be coming up against Benfica. They are a good, good team. They are on top of the table in Portugal. They've always caused problems in Europe. They've always been above average, and they've got some very, very good players. It's a mixture of late 20s and early 30s in terms of experience in the spine of the team, and then they've got young internationals that are wide players. And Benfica is one of these clubs. It's almost like a Spain 2 type, because they're capable of going in and buying young Argentines, buying young Brazilians, and allowing them the ability to get that experience in a Europa League to parlay that into a big money move. Alex Witsel is a perfect example. You know, he showcased himself and got big money move off of that the last year. So for me, Benfica is going to be very dangerous, but I'm just very, very interested to see how Rafa Benitez handles that congested schedule with Chelsea, considering he's already played, I think Chelsea's played somewhere around 63 or 64 games already, and he's got a penchant for throwing in young players while trying to find success in the EPL.
It's going to be very difficult indeed for Rafa Gonzalez and his side. And as we said, there's not been in the great performances in the Europa League. And it's still, though, throwing up plenty of thrills and spills. Fenerbahce then taking on Benfica after the draw today, and Chelsea taking on Basel, who managed to get past Tottenham Hotspur last night. Brian, though, absolute pleasure to have you on the show once again, my man. It's always good to get you on and chat all things Major League Soccer and a little bit of Europa League as well. Enjoy wherever you're off to this weekend, mate, and we look forward to getting you back on the show.
I appreciate it. Anytime.
Awesome, mate. Thanks for joining us today. Mr. Brian Dunseth joining us here on World Football Daily to talk all things Major League Soccer and a bit of Europa League as well. Brian was covering the Fenerbahce game from last night. And Fenerbahce, as he says, plenty of Premier League experience and looking a good force in the Europa League. That is the choice tie, surely. Fenerbahce taking on Benfica. Can many people look past Chelsea as they take on Basel? Basel have knocked out Manchester United out of the Champions League before. They knocked out Tottenham last night on penalties, as we said earlier in the show. It's not a side to be underestimated, the Swiss side. There is no neutrality in Switzerland, in Basel, when it comes to their football, that's for sure. We're going to take a very quick break here on World Football Daily. When we come back, we will be talking all things football in the build-up to a big weekend in the European fixtures. We'll be finding out the pick of the litter and also doing a little bit of I Know the Score when we come back here on World Football Daily.